From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. So if you hear the setup for Josh Greenbaum's film, The Short Game, you might draw some conclusions. Basically, it's about these 7 and 8-year-old kids who are golf prodigies, and they're playing in the highly competitive junior golf circuit. But if you're thinking this is one of those exposés of overbearing stage parents who push their gifted kids, you'd be off the mark. Greenbaum sees that concept as a cop-out, which is not to say these parents aren't deeply invested. What's interesting about the film is just how passionate these young people are about the sport. So in many ways, the film is about having a passion and committing yourself to it. It's also about relationships and about the stakes of this game, the nerves, the emotions. Today in the program, we continue our series and documentary film. We're talking about The Short Game after the news. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we are continuing our series on documentary film. It's a partnership with the Utah Film Center. And we pick a film, we talk about the film, and then we screen it. Today in the program, we're profiling Josh Greenbaum's film, The Short Game. It was an audience favorite this year at South by Southwest. And it's a sports film, sort of. It's about golf. But here's the spin. This is about kids who play, not just any kids, the best young players in the world. These are 7 and 8-year-old kids playing in the highly competitive junior golf circuit. But the film is about more than just golf. Jack Nicklaus appears in the film, and he explains this as well as anyone. This is about life, he says, about learning about yourself, about competition, about relationships. It's also about the stakes of this game and the nerves. We invite you to join the conversation if you like. 801-585-WEST is the number. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We're going to be screening the film next week. We'll give you the details about that as we go along. Josh Greenbaum is the director of The Short Game. He's written and directed for Comedy Central, for Paramount Pictures, for Funny or Die, and many others. This documentary is his first feature-length film. Chris Leggett is also with us, a producer on The Short Game, came to the project with a background in sports media, including his work as a producer for NBC Universal Sports for both the 2010 and 2012 Olympic Games. Josh and Chris are joining us today from a studio in Los Angeles. They're going to be here next week for that screening I mentioned, and again, we'll give you the details about that as we go along. Josh Greenbaum, Chris Leggett, welcome. Thanks very much for being with us.
Hey, Doug. Thanks so much for having us.
Well, I guess we should start with, Josh, let me ask you first. Give us a sense of how you got started with this project. This was a friend of yours, David Frankel, this acclaimed producer, has two kids in this subculture, this world of young golf, I guess.
That's right. Yeah, David Frankel, the producer director of lots of wonderful movies, among them Marley and Me and The Devil Wears Prada. He's been in this world for years. He has twin boy and girl, and they started at a very young age, and he approached our other producer, who's not with us today, Raphael Marmore, and said, hey, this is a great world for a doc. And Rafi and I met on it early on over lunch one day, and he sort of approached me and said, hey, we had been looking to work on something together, and said, what do you think about this world? And, it instantly kind of said, I'm a huge fan of docs. I started in docs years and years ago and have been in more of the narrative space for a while. But what jumped out at both of us instantly was when we found out there were 6-year-olds doing it.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of wonderful docs kind of in the 13-year-old range, like Racing Dreams and, of course, Spellbound, mm-hmm. which has always been one of my favorites. But not a lot of coverage at that age of 6 and 7. And to me, what jumped out is – boy, this could be funny. This is an age when kids sort of don't censor themselves and they say really funny things. And
I'm jumping ahead. No, I just wanted to say the thing that drew you was the fact that it was funny. I mean, I like that idea.
That was the clincher. In a way. I mean, certainly I'm throwing away a lot of other depth that I knew would be there. Certainly looking at it's a global competition. We get to kind of examine families and the way kids are raised and the differences amongst cultures. But to me, what was so exciting was there's sort of a lack or a dearth of comedic, lighter, more colorful, funny, uplifting, inspiring docs. Yeah. I think for whatever reason, you know, us documentary filmmakers tend to gravitate towards, I think, issues that maybe aren't being covered in the other forms of media. And so you see a lot of exposés and political things, and they get dark and heavy, and which are wonderful. But, you know, my sort of taste and tone has always been the glass is half full, and what a wonderful world, which you know, I thought could be exciting to bring into the doc space. So that, yes, I guess it. I won't renege on my comment. I was drawn in by the notion of this being a fun, comedic look into a very unique world.
It really is funny. I mean, we should say that. And when we get to the characters, Alan is really a funny kid. I mean, there are a lot of really funny kids, but I want to talk about Alan in a minute. It's interesting, Josh, you've talked about the fact that you're a fan of the documentary, that BBC documentary series 7 Up.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that was certainly one of the very first things that popped into my head when we started talking about this was 7 Up. And, you know, I'm sure listeners of your show probably are familiar with it, but those who aren't, it's this amazing documentary series that began, I believe, in the 60s, maybe even the 50s.
Yeah, 60s.
Where they profiled a group of children in Britain who were all 7 years old. And they asked them wonderfully kind of deep questions. And that's what's great about this age is you ask them something, you know, like what is the meaning of life, or what is how do you find happiness? How important is money? Things like that. And they what are you going to be when you grow up? One of the best questions to ask a little kid. Mm. And what's amazing about that series, first of all, the very first film was called 7 Up, and it's a wonderful film, and you can watch it on Netflix. But then they went back and they checked in with these same subjects every 7 years. And they just released, I believe, 63 Up,
yeah.
Which is the 9th film in the installment. And you get to see what, you know, what came true, what didn't come true of these kids' visions for their future. But always, you know, the quote, I believe, that began 7 Up was, show me a boy at 7 and I'll show you the man. I think it's a very interesting idea. You know, I think you could interpret it many different ways. The way I sort of like to think of it is at that stage, you know, you're that's really where your attitudes and your approach to life really defines you and in a good way. I don't mean to say it traps you. I think it's, you know, when we look at these kids in our film, yes, they're kids and they say really silly things, but they say incredibly profound things at the same time.
Yeah. Alan, again, which will get to amazingly profound. So, Chris, let me ask you, did you guys, when you were talking about as you're shooting, was there a moment where the film sort of evolved at a point where you didn't figure it was going to head that way, or did it all sort of play out in some way where you thought it might?
You know, when we started shooting this, we went out there. We went to North Carolina for the World Championships the year before. That's kind of how we scouted and met some of the kids. And you know, that was some of the risk in picking the kids is how they were going to develop. But a lot of what we kind of found was that the story was going to follow these – you know, the story was going to progress and these kids were going to develop and they were going to grow and we were going to see a lot of growth either way. So being able to follow those stories really didn't give us, you know, with what Josh is saying, there was a comedy, there was this bigger picture to it. So it wasn't – we didn't have to angle it to look for some kind of result that we were looking for at the end.
Yeah.
It didn't really steer the ship that way.
Yeah. Yeah, I think exactly. We – you know, you come in with you being human, you can't help but come in with expectations, you know, and prejudices. But, you know, as a filmmaker, you know, we try to come in with the least amount of those as possible. And so in a way, everything is unexpected. You know, everything turns out different than what you may have thought or expected. But in some ways, I think what Chris is saying, which is right on, you know, what's nice about doing this kind of documentary is, you know, there's an ending. You know, when we were pitching this early on and trying to get funding, you know, a lot of people were saying, we love this, it sounds amazing, but we just can't commit to funding what, you know, what's called a verite documentary. We don't know what the ending is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what I always said to that is, look, neither do I, but I can tell you that, you know, it's going to be exciting. You know,
right.
We're going to follow 8 kids. I'm going to do my best to make them feel like your little brother and your little sister. And they're wonderful kids, and you'll get invested in their fate. And some are going to win and some are going to lose. And ultimately, hopefully, what you take from this film is it's in fact not about that. It's mm-hmm. about something bigger.
Yeah. So
yes, to answer your question, I think every day was sort of a new discovery and lots of wonderful unexpected twists and turns, which I think great documentaries always have.
I want to ask you about – well, let's get to Alan because I want to get to these characters. And we'll talk about a number of the different – we have eight different kind of storylines, eight – all amazing kids for all kinds of different reasons. But it seems like the kind of the heart of the film in some way, at least for me it was, is Alan Kournikova. He's Anna Kournikova's sister, and he's incredibly charismatic. He's 8 years old in the film, and he's – and I wonder, did you guys know immediately when you met him that he's going to kind of be the heart of the film and that you had lucked out by meeting such a kid?
Yeah, I think Alan is one of those – you know, there's something as a director, regardless of if you're in the documentary space or the narrative space, what I'm always looking for is that kind of it's hard to put your finger on it, but when you see it, you know it.
Yeah.
You recognize it. Call it charisma, or what you want, but Alan has it. It just sort of you gravitate towards him. He has this persona that he's only seven, and in fact, when we met him, he was six. And a good chunk of the film, he's actually six in, but during the competition, he's seven. He just has this outlook on life that is incredibly inspiring. Now, I think a lot of the kids do, you know, but he. He sort of boldly puts it forth and wears it on his sleeve quite proudly that there's just this confidence about him that, you know, again, I think at that age, there's something incredibly powerful about having not experienced tons of failure. You know, as we get older, you start to look back and think about, oh, when I tried this, I failed. And when I tried that, I hurt myself or I lost. And so you start second guessing and you don't kind of perform with the confidence that you may need to succeed. And someone like a 7-year-old, but someone like Alan Kournikova, he doesn't do that. He, you know, as you see in the film, when he sees the flag, that's all he sees. He doesn't see the sand bunkers. He doesn't see the water. He doesn't see any of the hazards. He just sees the goal and what he wants, and he goes for it. And there's an incredible power in that approach to the game, but certainly in that approach to life.
Well, I won't give too much away, but there's a moment toward the end of the film where he makes this incredibly gutsy call to make this shot. And his caddy's saying, what are you doing? Like, this is
yes. –
but it's an amazing moment. Let me play a clip from the film. This is early on. This is Alan and his mother, Alla Kournikova. Gives you a sense of just who Alan Kournikova is. Here it is from the film, The Short Game.
I like to win, but I can't win all the time.
He doesn't like to lose, and like yesterday he lost. It's hard for him.
I just play my butt off, but they just didn't go in. All the putts slipped out and didn't go in. It was ugly.
But also, you know, he has to learn how to lose. Has to realize it's hard. Yeah.
You have to lose a little. But I try not to lose it also. I try not to. This year, I'll probably come in first place because I'm going to try my best ever and that never stops me. In my mind, I don't even think about getting runner-ups.
Alan Kournikova. Yeah, what a great kid. And, you know, I have to say, and this is another thing, and this happens throughout the film. You set – I have to say, at least for me, this was the case. There is a certain kind of expectation where there's going to be kind of an obnoxious kid or something like that. Or, and we'll talk about this too, the idea of an overbearing parent. And then it doesn't really work out that way. I mean, I like him throughout. I mean, he's really focused for sure. But he's also – and this is another theme that comes up in the film – and then one minute he's talking seriously like he's this, you know, pro golfer. And then in the next minute he's screwing around with his buddies. And it keeps coming back around to that. I think that's what's nice and surprising about the film.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, in some ways it's hard to vilify a 7-year-old. You know?
Right.
You know,
Not
that you should and not that we ever wanted to. But, you know, there's a purity still at that age. And I tried to, you know, throughout the film with all characters, and I try to do this with all my work, it's you try to find the humanity in them. You know, what is it? What are they after? What do they want? And how is it similar to something I might want? You know, the way these kids are passionate about golf, I am about filmmaking.
Yeah.
And while they may seem incredibly disparate, in fact, you know, what we want out of them and feeling like we have a purpose in life and like we have something to say and something we can accomplish is certainly universal. And I think, you know, Alan kind of exemplifies that in many ways. But I do think all the kids do. But yeah, it's just – it's great to hear him say those things. You know, he sets his goal and says, I think I'm going to win, you know, mm-hmm. and it's not – yeah, it's cocky. It's confident, but it's I like to think of it more confident. You know, it's set your goals and then try to achieve them.
Well, there's
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say there's a really great contrast in the film. Alan is on one hand a kid who is about the joy and passion of the game. He's not too much in his head. He goes out there and sort of just joyfully plays. The other end of that is Amari Avery, this incredibly gifted 8-year-old from Riverside, California, really one of the best golfers of her generation. She's an extraordinary player. But one of the themes about in the film that emerges with Amari is she is completely in her head. She's almost the contrast, mm-hmm. do you think, to Alan?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, as you said earlier, all the kids kind of represent certain different aspects of the game and, of course, the parallel to life. Absolutely. You know, I think you'll see Amari, who has got hands down one of the most beautiful swings I've seen in any golfer mm-hmm. at any age. Mm-hmm. I remember I was in South Africa showing the film to Gary Player, who's in the film, as well as Jack Nicklaus. Both of them saw her swing and commented and went, wow, that is just a beautiful swing. And so she has this natural, pure gift for the game. But yes, an absolute, you know, I think she'd be the first to tell you one of the weaknesses, and she does in the film talk about, is the psychological and emotional aspect of the game. Mm-hmm. For anyone who's ever played it, it is an incredibly taxing psychological game.
Yep.
It's just you and the course, and that's unique to golf. Obviously, there's a few other sports like that, but not many. You know, tennis, it's yourself, but yet you're playing against another human being. This, you're playing against a course, and in many ways, it's against yourself. And when you have a bad hole, or you have a bad shot, it can ruin you. You can focus on it, and it can drag you down. And I think, Amari, you'll see in the film, certainly struggles with that. What I like about it is that she fights through it constantly, mm-hmm. and she's working towards getting better at it. And certainly, the parallel to my own life, and I think to anyone's life, is that, you know, when you catch a bad break, how do you react? You know, when you fall down, do you get back up, knowing that you might fall again and get hurt again? So I think she is she represents another aspect of the game, which is certainly the mental side of it.
Here's another clip from the film. We'll hear Amari here and her father, Andre. You'll also hear Brian Schwartz, who's Amari's coach, and you get a sense about the relationship between Amari and her dad in this excerpt from the short game.
She has more qualities in a golf swing than I've seen in all the rest of the students I've had. The area that really needs to be worked on, and we have worked on, is really her emotions.
One of my weaknesses is my negativity, and I am working on that.
Golf's an emotional game by itself. Definitely when they have a bad hole, that's when you see a lot of conflict between the parent caddy and the child.
I don't know why you tell Brian I'm giving
I'm not giving attitude.
Attitude.
You should be doing what you practice. I don't care how
you're
close
giving
it looks.
Me an attitude.
She is very intolerant of bad shot. And so she does have an explosive temper, which you will see in every great player. She thinks she should hit every shot perfectly.
Let me ask you, this raises the question you heard on, we'll hear from him again, Andre, Amari's dad. And one thing, I wanted to get this out of the way, this is not one of those overbearing parent films. In fact, you've talked about, Josh, the fact that that kind of overbearing parent stereotype kind of bores you. It's a sort of a cop-out, I think is how you put it.
Yeah. You know, it was interesting. When I first was taking around the film with Rafi and Chris and we were kind of pitching it, and it was amazing how many people just sort of – that was the instinct was, oh, OK.
Jump right to it.
Yeah. It's a stage parents. Yeah. Those crazy parents in the golf world. And obviously, sure, that's going to be part of it. You look at any youth sports in any capacity, you're going to find parents that probably get overinvested. But yes, to me, it's a cop-out where it's a superficial look at something, because the reality is we're – you know, I'm a new dad. I have 11-month-old identical twin girls. Mm-hmm. And so while I was making the film, I was becoming a dad, and it was interesting to see. But, you know, we all want the best for our kids. We all want them to have a better life than we did. We all want to see them succeed because we know with success comes happiness. So – you know, and our approach to helping them attain that success and attain that happiness is varied, and some may be more flawed than others. But if we can stop and recognize that, hey, we all are trying for the same thing, and it's a growing process, just like kids are growing, I think parents have to grow. You'll hear a wonderful line in the film that Andre says. He recognizes towards the end of the film that just like Amari is growing, I need to grow along with her. I think, you know, my hope and the approach was that there's more to it than just, oh, overbearing parents. And I don't want to put forth the idea that we swept that idea under the rug if we saw it. I mean, I think if you watch the film, you'll see it. You know, there are moments where our subjects and our parents are overly invested, and it's they kind of call themselves in check.
Yeah.
But it's human to care a lot about your children and how they're doing in life. So
it raises the term daddy caddy comes up in terms of the relationship these kids have with their parents, often their dads. It's not always their dads. But let's talk about Skye Sudbury, because there's another moment from the film I want to play. Talk about Skye first. She's like the most unlikely of the characters, I have to say. She seems like would be the least interested person in golf, but she's really good.
Really good, yeah. Skye is – I mean, they're all incredible. Skye is from the Woodlands, Texas, which is an area outside of Houston, and she is this tiny, tiny girl who hits the ball really far and is an incredible putter, and she just loves the game. She's, you know – really adorable blonde girl, wears kind of nothing but pink. Her entire closet is filled with pink. She has, like, I think over 50 different stuffed animal rabbits, all named Rabby. I don't know how she tells them apart, but she takes them with her to the course to bring her good luck. But she's just, you know, she's got this kind of incredible spirit and just, she literally skips from hole to hole. Mm-hmm. She just loves it out there.
Yeah, when we were out there filming her in Texas, actually, one of the stories that I really remember was just her love of the game too. She really just enjoys being out there with her dad. She was there with a coach, and they were doing some kind of chipping drill where, you know, she's hitting 100 balls onto the green, and then her coach or her dad says something like, "Let's try to get them in." And then all of a sudden, that was all it took. You know, she was just there to have fun and be there, and then let's chip them in, and they're all being put within a foot, 2 feet of the hole, just in repetition, and just a big smile on her face, and wouldn't want to be anywhere else, which was amazing.
Yeah, and then they finish that drill and go and fish in the Erner dad go fishing in this pond, which unfortunately is actually, now that I'm saying it out loud, realizing it's not in the film. You know, as sometimes you have to kill your darlings, and that was a really wonderful moment. But
the big hazard on the 18th hole.
Yeah,
there's some trout.
They pulled out a trout, but just a wonderful relationship.
Bob's a great character, Bob Sudbury, her dad.
Yeah,
because he, you know, he's just biting his knuckles from time to time. Doesn't want to be this intense, but is really into it. And this is where the question of what a daddy caddy is. You're going to hear in this clip Bob and Skye, but also Skye's mom, Robin, from The Short Game.
What's a daddy caddy?
Oh, you know, a daddy caddy is...
You're a daddy and you're caddy.
You know, just a guy that carries the bags, keeps her calm.
Can I try to keep you calm?
She keeps me calm. You know, when we first started into playing the World Championship, you could cut the tension with a knife with Skye and I. You gotta hit it, baby, you gotta hit it. Go, 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 go.
Why are you so calm down? Sometimes he yells at me and I don't like it.
It'd be nice. But I've gotten a lot better, haven't I?
Yeah.
I've gotten a lot better.
He does a very good job at managing his feelings and what he wants to say, letting a few seconds transpire before it comes out of his mouth.
What a great try. Tap that in for par.
It's a definite learning experience.
What a great try. He didn't really feel that way, but that's what he said. And that's the thing that's so great about these moments, and this happens with almost all the players, is the dads or the moms, they're really trying. You can tell they don't exactly mean it, but they really are, all seem to be trying.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that clip that you just played, I think that moment where he said, where Bob says, you know, what a great try. You watch this incredible transformation where he's on screen. He's really struggling with, I think he wants to yell out, come on, why did you miss it? And he internalizes it and turns it around. And, you know, I think anyone who's, we've seen this in the theater now a few times, and that moment gets this enormous laugh, which to me points to the universality of it. You know, in comedy, I think it's all about finding truth, you know, and when you hit on a universal truth, that's when an audience just blows up and dies laughing, because we all know that. We've all been there. We've all felt that or seen that. But yeah, they're trying. You know, it was wonderful to see all these different parents and how they approach parenting, and yet how at the core of it all, there's certainly a deep love for their children.
Josh Greenbaum is with us. He's director of the documentary The Short Game. Chris Leggett co-produced the film. Next Wednesday, it's June 5th, we're going to be presenting a free screening of the film. It's part of our Through the Lens series in partnership with the Utah Film Center. Josh and Chris are going to be on hand for a Q&A following the film. That's going to be at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center in downtown Salt Lake City. It starts at 7 o'clock. We'll give you more information on our website, radiowest.kuer.org. We'll take a brief break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we continue our series on documentary film, Through the Lens, our partnership with the Utah Film Center. We're talking about the film The Short Game, Josh Greenbaum's film. Chris Leggett is also with us, and next week we're going to be screening the film at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center in downtown Salt Lake City. We'll give you the details about that. Right now, Josh and Chris are joining us today from a studio in Los Angeles. So how do you describe... Josh Greenbaum, your relationship with the kids. Like, what was the relationship you had to strike with all of them?
I guess in a word, big brother. To keep it simple. I think it's always a challenge. I've done a few different documentary projects in the past, and you have to find a balance of obviously intimacy and friendship and trust, because the only way you're gonna get someone's true self is if they trust you and if they feel as though they know you. And so you do have to become intimate with your subject, yet at the same time you want enough distance where you don't become so close that, in a weird way, if you become too close, sometimes doors close. I know that sounds odd, but if you've ever you ever try to have a real serious conversation with a really good friend, sometimes it's like weird. You're like, why are we going so deep right now? Because we're friends, right? So you have to have this little bit of distance. But I think what was nice in a way was maybe easier with this project was I've just always loved kids. I've just, there's something about their passion and their approach to the world and to life. Be it their non-judgmental thing or the fact that they. When you ask them, what are you going to be when they grow up, and they say, I'm going to be an astronaut, they wholeheartedly believe they're going to be an astronaut, and that's great. So it was fairly easy for me to strike up a relationship with them. And my goal, as I think I said earlier in the program, was to really, for an audience, to make it feel like how I feel my relationship to them is, which is, for an audience, I wanted them to feel like these were your little brothers and your little sisters. And you're rooting them on. And certainly my relationship with the parents I think was similar. It's more complicated in that, you know, they also have to trust you. But it takes a while. That's part of documentary filmmaking. I mean, you know, Chris and I traveled around the world, and for the first half of the film, you get to meet everyone in their hometowns.
Yep.
And we went to China, and we went to France, and the Philippines, and South Africa, and all over the U.S. And you know, a lot of part of the technique is I wouldn't usually do a sit-down interview with the kid until day 4 or 5. You know, we would follow them around with the cameras, let them play with the cameras. I mean, you'll see in the film, there's moments where Alan has headphones on and is holding the microphone, you know.
Yeah.
And that's part of letting them feel as though they're part of the film and gaining their trust and letting them become comfortable, because, you know, you put a pretty big camera and a boom mic in front of a 7-year-old and most of them are going to clam up. It's a process, and hopefully by day 4 or 5, they felt a little safer, you know, in talking with me. And another technique is I would almost always interview them in their room. You know, it was like find the safest place.
Yeah.
And the start of the interview is almost always the same, which is show me your room.
Yeah.
What an awesome room.
Right.
You know, what's that? What's this? And let them start showing you some of the things that they're most excited about and most proud about in their room. And then the dialogue can flow from there.
Mm-hmm. Want to do? We don't have time to talk about all of the storylines, but let me just sort of do a shotgun, sort of thumbnail sketch of some of the other kids, because they're really remarkable. And you mentioned traveling all around the world. Really, let's start in South Africa and Zama Xana. What's great about this storyline? He's 8, I guess, right, guys? Or was?
Yes.
Yes.
He's 8 in the film, yep.
Yeah. And what's great about Zama's story is the stakes for him in some way. It's like he's representing his people. He's representing the country. And also this, you know, 40 years of oppression he's trying to break. I mean, the stakes are pretty high on this kid in some level.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. I mean, Zama is just this incredible boy who and it comes from this incredible family. They live in a town of Benoni outside of Johannesburg, South Africa. And, you know, if you think that for a long time golf was primarily more of a white or European sport in America, obviously you can sort of extrapolate on that and imagine what it was like in South Africa.
Yeah.
So he is certainly one of the very few black South African golfers for his age, and very well aware of it, as is his family. And so, yeah, but he doesn't, you know, when you'll hear in the film when I ask him about it, he doesn't see himself as that. You
yeah.
know, I think he says, I'm South African.
Mm-hmm.
And he says this wonderful line I love where he says, you know, we all make South Africa mm-hmm. proud. And he wants to go get the trophy and bring it back to his school and to his country. And it's incredible to hear a 7 or an 8-year-old thinking on those terms, and it's inspiring to see the goals he has for himself.
Yeah.
And the people he surrounds himself very much encourage that in a non-pressure way, but yeah. I think just really, you know, at his school, obviously, they're very encouraging of his endeavors, and, you know, it really showcases some movement and lets him kind of be who he wants to be.
Yeah. Kuang Yang, age 7, from Shenzhen, China. One of the greatest lines, it has to be a subtitle because his dad doesn't speak English. But I love this line. He says, "No one in our family plays golf." I mean,
yes.
He completely stumbles into the game in some way.
Yeah. Yeah. Kuang Yang is, I mean, you'll see the story in the film, which is really funny. I can't remember the age. I believe it was maybe 2 or 3. And Kuang Yang is in a DVD store and he sees a DVD and is obsessing over it. He says, I want this, I want this, I want this to his dad. And his dad goes and looks at it and sees it's a golf tutorial DVD. And, you know, says, really, Kuang Yang?
Dubbed
yeah.
golf tutorial.
Yeah, dubbed in terrible, terrible. It's obviously an American tutorial, but dubbed in Chinese. But, you know, says, really, you want this DVD? And Kuang Yang says, yes, 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 I want it. Well, it turns out Kuang Yang thought it was a cartoon. And yet he still, you know, he went home and he watched it and he wound up watching it and watching it and watching it. And again, it's like these weird twists of fate that maybe, you know, maybe there is some, I don't know what you want to call it, a higher power that's pulling us along in our lives to where we need to be. But that's one of those examples of, you know, he absolutely stumbled into it, and his family are not golfers. Yep. And yet once you have a kid who's passionate like Kwang Young is, and like his father does, you support him and you say, okay, well, I guess, you know, you got invited to this huge tournament because you're so talented at this game in America, and we'll buy tickets and fly and go to the United States for a week to have this 7-year-old boy compete in a golf tournament. So really an amazing story as well.
You know, that idea of having a passion is, I think, an important theme really in the film. And there's a terrific character, Jed Dye, from Manila in the Philippines. He's an autistic player, and we can get a little bit more to talking about him. But Jed's mother talks about how Jed is passionate about golf, and she says this. She says, "I don't have a passion, but he does, and that's why he gets so upset when he loses." And that seems to be a really important theme. It seems like all of the kids have that kind of joyful passion.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. They found something that they love and that makes them happy. And I think what Lanny Dye, Jed's mom, is expressing is the idea that she hasn't necessarily found that, or as I think a lot of parents can talk about, they had that, and as you get older and or as you have children, you kind of, you know, you may have to let go of some of those passions, and that may be a bad thing. Or what you do is you take on your children's passion as yours. I think, you know, that can be viewed as unhealthy or healthy. You know, yeah. She's certainly struggling as much as he is, as he goes through the ups and downs mm-hmm. of the game. And but yeah, the kids just love the game. I mean, that's – I will say, back to your question earlier about what were their surprises in the process, I think I wasn't even expecting the degree to which – how much these kids love this thing, mm-hmm. you know, because I think I had my passions as a kid, and, you know, what they kind of consistently changed, which I think most parents can relate to. It's like, you know, you want to – I remember wanting to turn my bathroom into a dark room, like a photography dark room. And I think my parents were like, well, Let's give it a week or, you know, a month before when you all of a sudden want to go, you know, get into something completely different. But these kids, yeah, they've just got that focus, and I think you see it with some people who are incredibly successful. I think if you look at Tiger Woods, who, you know, in the beginning of our film, well, actually, when you meet Amari Avery, who has an incredible amount of similarities to Tiger, she's mm-hmm. in fact called the Tigress.
Yeah.
But he started at a young age, and he was passionate about the game, and you know, and Michael Jordans of the world, and the Bill Gates and Steve Jobs, who they found their passion and they devoted themselves to it. And, you know, there's that old quote, if you do what you love, you'll never work a day in your life. And I think that's certainly true for these kids. It certainly is not work for them.
Yeah.
When they finish a tournament, they're back out on the putting greens. They're back mm-hmm. out of the driving range, and oftentimes without their parents. I mean, the parents are like, let's go home. And the kids are like, one more putt, you know, as you'll see in the film.
Yeah. Let me play another excerpt from the film. This is Rick Pano, who's Alexa Pano's father. She's another 8-year-old great character in the film. And then you'll also hear the great Alan Kournikova also from the film The Short Game.
She sacrifices sleepovers, things like school dances, school plays, after-school time, play dates. But that's their decision. What they have in common more than anything is they have the passion to play a game, and they don't get tired from it. And you can see when these kids are done playing, they're on the putting green. They don't go home for 5, 6, 7 hours, and you can't pull them off the golf course. That comes from within.
I don't know why I can't describe it. I just love playing golf. I don't feel like I'm giving up my childhood. I just feel like golf is my childhood. I love it so much that I don't think I'm giving it up.
from the film The Short Game. Josh Greenbaum is the director. Chris Leggett co-produced the film. Next Wednesday, June 5th at 7 o'clock, we're presenting a free screening of The Short Game. It's part of our Through the Lens series in partnership with the Utah Film Center. Josh and Chris are going to be in town for a Q&A following the film at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center in downtown Salt Lake City. We get started at 7. Go to our website for the details, radiowest.kuer.org. We'll take another break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about the documentary The Short Game, directed by Josh Greenbaum. Chris Leggett is the co-producer on the film. It's part of our documentary series Through the Lens. We're screening the film next week, next Wednesday. We'll give you the details about that as we go along. So the film sort of works its way to the culmination of this world championship in Pinehurst, at Pinehurst in North Carolina. And I'm wondering, how did you guys manage the logistics? I mean, you've got 8 storylines working out. You're trying to capture the emotional moments, the stories, the shots. All I mean, how did you have to work that out?
Well, that's where really good producers come in, like Chris and Rafi, because that was a huge challenge. I mean, I can set up, the setup, which is 8 kids, as you said, Doug, who are also on usually almost always on different holes,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
On often different on different courses, because based on the age, and then obviously girls and boys actually play separately. It was quite a beast. Mm-hmm. So Chris,
and there was
can
some,
talk about how we covered it.
You know, the other obstacle was, you know, we tried to keep crews together that had been out to these their homes. You know, there was, like Josh said earlier, a lot of the intimacy comes from this comfort level that Cruz and Josh were able to establish with these kids. So really what we tried to do is like Josh said, we had 18 cameras running around and you know, had a very tight schedule of what tea times there were, and tried to get Josh from hole to hole so that he could conduct the kind of after round interviews. And then there was basically an eccentric walkie-talkie system. I mean, one of the things that we had to really, you know, structure, Josh kind of, you know, we developed the shooting style on the courses as we got moving, trying to figure out, you know, I think Josh initially, we thought it was more of verite running and getting to the holes and really capturing kind of a 24/7 vibe, which we, you know, Josh kind of found halfway through as we started looking, because we were editing the whole time, that, you know, some of the tension, especially in golf, I don't know if you want to go into, was in the static, in these moments, in these eyes, in the club. You know, there was a lot of.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what we found in a weird way is it's such a small, the movements are so tiny, you know, the mm-hmm. grip, the hands gripping a club, the eyes focusing, you know, a putt. And if you try to kind of like, I would say, sexy that up, you know, and make it more exciting and do a 360 dolly around them as they're doing it, it in a weird way makes it more boring. You know, whereas if you do that kind of shooting style with boxing or with football and you kind of go counter, there's a lot of kinetic energy and movement in that game. Golf is incredibly still. And so what we discovered early on was, you know, using tripods and trying more static kind of shots and certainly an intense close-ups proved to create more drama and capture the essence of the game more accurately. Mm-hmm. That said, however, the kids move quickly. And so you're talking about what a huge challenge of the production was is you want to see the kids' face and their emotion. You also – so there's a camera. You also want to see the parents, which are often one or two, you know, or a whole family's reactions. So in some ways, there's another camera. But then you also have to capture where the ball went. So there's another camera. And now you're talking about 8 kids. And in fact, we did have 9 at one point. So now you're talking about 27 cameras. So it becomes this sort of beast. And we had to really be strategic about how we covered it. I remember we started the tournament off with – I think our crew was over 50 people because we had 9 sound guys, 18 cameras. We had a helicopter camera. But I remember leading this giant meeting – You know, with full with PowerPoint presentation and then walking the golf course with 50 people and thinking like, boy, this doesn't feel like a documentary anymore. But it was the only way to capture it. You know, it was the only way.
And it's also a delicate thing. I mean, golf, you can't have people running around the course. There's a whole other golf etiquette element that you have to incorporate with, you know, tripods have to be pulled back. You can't have things on the green. I mean, all our crew needed to learn golf rules, golf etiquette. Don't move during people's swings. So you just saw people doing the dance halfway through the fairway, waiting for people to swing and then run and then swing. And then it was very interesting.
It's a challenge.
Yeah. Getting the more emotional moments, the delicacy of shooting kids in moments when they're upset, deciding what to leave in, what to take out must have been really difficult. And I want to ask you about what I think is one of the most powerful moments in the film. This is Amari Avery and her father, Andre. He's her daddy caddy. And the relationship between them is complicated because he gets frustrated. She's all about her emotions. And Josh, I want to have you set up this moment. I'm not going to give anything away, I promise. But there's this really powerful moment in the film where Amari is breaking down. She's not having a good game. And Andre is trying to stabilize her, I think is how he puts it, trying to get her on an even keel again. But you can just sense the frustration. And then in this clip, you get a sense that the stakes are very big for Andre. They don't have a lot of money. He's hoping that this career will that golf will give her a career, but also a college education. I mean, it's a really powerful moment. You want to set this up for us?
Yeah, I mean, I think you did a great job right there. I mean, the clip I think you're about to play is exactly that. It's the final day of the tournament, and Amari is really struggling, and with her struggling is Andre, her father, trying to, as you said, bring her back or bring her at least back to stabilization. I think that's enough of what you need as a setup to kind of understand, I think, what then happens.
Just got to figure out how to get her back when she loses it. Just how to get her back. We just put a lot of work into this stuff, man. Put a lot of work into it. I would love for her to go to college, a nice college, and get her degree. I can't afford for her to go to a good college. No way. On what I make, there's no way. So what's going to get me that school? That little white ball. That little white ball is going to get her to that level. And when the mind goes bad, what do you do?
There's another excerpt from the film from Gary Player, this Hall of Famer golfer. Most of you probably know the name. But he talks about what it is that makes a champion. Chris and Josh, do you think that you have a better understanding of that idea, what it is that makes a champion, when you've seen all of these dynamics play out creating this film?
I would say yes and no. You know, I think the film, you know, without giving too much away, certainly that was a big question that we had as we made it, you know, and we were seeking that answer. The definitive idea of I guess if you interpret that question two ways, if it's how do you breed a champion, how do you create a champion? Mm-hmm. I think there's, you know, that's still very much a mystery. And I think maybe if we play the Gary Player clip, you'll kind of hear that. My own take on what makes a champion, certainly in the process of making this film, I think was certainly much more defined. And I think the film, from my perspective, what I hope it says is it defines it in the terms that I think I like to see what makes a champion. So I know that was sort of evasive of the question, but I also don't want to sort of give away the sort of final ending of the film and what the film has to say. But the question of what are the characteristics and traits that create a champion? I think Gary Player says it pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Often people say, what is it makes a champion? It's an accumulation of many things. Talent? It's something more than talent. It just doesn't happen. It's hard work. It's a work ethic. It's a big sacrifice. Patience is a big thing. You've got to have great nerves. It's a puzzle. with many little things in it that make a champion. The other thing is, if we all knew, everybody would be a champion. There's something called it that nobody yet has been able to describe.
So what are the I'm wondering how people are reacting to the film. They loved it at South by Southwest. And I wonder what the expectations for a film like this are versus the reaction. How are people reacting? What's the sense you're getting?
Well, it's been great seeing this film play on big screen. I mean, it definitely has been intended for that. And the way it was shot and just kind of the emotions and hearing people laugh in a theater, I mean, it's just a great feeling. And one of the things I was talking with Josh earlier about that's been amazing about this film, having eight kids and just listening to people's reaction, they all find a connection to someone. And generally, it's not the same one. I mean, people, you know, obviously it resonates with something. Something in Alan resonates to somebody and something in Jed resonates to another person.
Yeah. It's a joy to see it, how it's been received. I mean, we went to South by Southwest however long ago it's been, a month or so, two ago. Really not having ever seen it with an audience of more than a couple friends of ours. Mm-hmm. And then to be in a theater with 300-plus people, amongst them five of the kids from the film who had never seen the film.
Wow.
Yeah, which was just – I remember constantly, you know, I'm watching the film half the time and then I'm leaning out of my seat watching the kids' faces.
And then you hear a big South African laugh from the back of the room.
Yeah,
it was great.
Zama's dad was there. Zama flew all the – and his family flew all the way from South Africa, mm-hmm. which was just such a treat. And we got to bring them up on stage at the end of it and you do a Q&A. And it's just been – I mean – you know, I like to think that the filmmaking process for me is always more about the process, and I find joy in the making of the film as opposed to the final product and the watching of it. But I'll tell you, there was nothing beating watching the film with those kids and seeing how they grew over the year. I felt proud, really proud.
It's Josh Greenbaum. He directed The Short Game. Chris Leggett, producer of the film. This coming Wednesday at 7 o'clock, we're presenting a free screening of The Short Game, part of our Through the Lens series in partnership with the Utah Film Center. Go to our website for the particulars. Josh Greenbaum, Chris Leggett, thanks very much for the time.
Thanks,
Doug.
See you next week. Radio West, a production of KUER News, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.